week by week, from the pick of new material, from the pages of best-selling novels, from the theater of Broadway and London, and the sound stages of Hollywood, will parade the most remarkable figures ever known. CBS gives you Suspense.
Buck Benny, the two-fisted, quick-triggered marksman who shoots from the hip and never misses.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to another episode of Suspense. Last week, we started by having the first hour-long episode of Suspense. Suspense lost its sponsor. And so what does Suspense do instead of canceling? They decide to create hour-long shows instead. And Robert Montgomery becomes the host. And I thought he did a good job of explaining the show. And so I thought it really didn't need my intro. So that's why we didn't do an intro last week. But this week I thought I'd come on and talk a little bit about the hour shows. There's not going to be too many hour shows. They did it for just a small period of time and decided a half hour worked better. One of the reasons, and this happens, seems like a lot when shows go from a half hour to an hour, Twilight Zone was a half-hour show through most of its run, and in the fourth season they tried an hour-long format, and then they went back to the half-hour after that because they decided that the hour-long format just made them pad the episodes a little too much, and it worked better as a vignette that was shorter and more to the point. And that's, I think, the exact same thing that they discovered with Suspense. The other problem was sometimes the Suspense episodes, these hour-long episodes, a lot of them were just half-hour episodes that they brought in the original writers often to add more to them to bring them to an hour. Well, if you take something that's written for a half hour and just try and expand it to an hour, well, almost by definition, you're just adding extra fluff to it to fill it out that much. Usually, you might not add that much to the episode, depending on the writer, of course. Now, tonight's episode is a little different in that it was written to be an hour. It was actually Howard Duff's is going to be our star in this episode. And he was played Sam Spade on radio for 4 or 5 years. And this is an actual episode that was done for Sam Spade. It was a two-parter, so it was 2 half-hours. And so now they put them together and put them on Suspense. And I think it's great they did this because I think of those 2 half-hour episodes, only one of them still is in circulation. So this way we get to hear the whole thing. This one, I'll read about it from the book Suspense that Martin Graham Jr. wrote. Great book that you should maybe pick up if you're a big Suspense fan. And here's what he says. He says, the second hour-long episode was Candy Tooth, an original radio script by Robert Tallman and Jason James. Howard Duff starred as Sam Spade, who goes on one of his greatest adventures. The Candy Tooth was previously broadcast on The Adventures of Sam Spade on November 24, 1946 and December 1, 1946 as a two-part episode. The Suspense announcer billed the program as the sequel to The Maltese Falcon, the film that made Sam Spade a famed detective. The story takes place 7 years after The Falcon Caper, when Casper Gutman, the Fat Man, returns in search of another rare find worth millions. Joseph Kearns plays the Fat Man. Lorraine Tuttle reprises her role from the radio series as Sam's secretary, Effie. A humorous addition was slipped into the script. A woman asks Sam for help. She tells him she has been to a few other detectives, including Philip Marlowe. Sam calls Marlowe to see if her story is true and thanks Marlowe for the referral. Anyway, the part of Sam Spade, originally, the character of Sam Spade, originated, like it says, with Maltese Falcon, where it was played by Humphrey Bogart. Now, what I've also included after this program's over, after Suspense is over, it'll go right into an episode of Screen Guild Theater from 1943, in which they had the Maltese Falcon with the original cast, and including Humphrey Bogart. So you get a chance to hear the radio version of Maltese Falcon, and it's great because it even has Peter Lorre in it. So I'm going to right now tie into a really short clip that just has all of the folks that are in the Maltese Falcon introduce themselves, and then it's going to go right into a 7-minute clip of Howard Duff being interviewed by Chuck Shaden, where he talks about being Sam Spade, but he also talks about, and Chuck Shaden talk about, the fact that Howard Duff and Elliot Lewis, who of course plays Remley on the Phil Harris show, when they were in the Army, in the Armed Services, they actually transcribed a whole lot of radio shows and kind of saved a huge piece of radio history for us. But they'll get into that, and after that we'll get right into the episode of Sam Spade on Suspense. So I hope you're going to enjoy this unique episode of Suspense.
The Screen Guild play tonight, The Maltese Falcon. The starring players, this is Humphrey Bogart.
This is Mary Astor.
This is Sidney Greenstreet.
And this is Peter Lorre.
Eventually got into the Armed Forces Radio Service, which is still is now the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service, right. A branch of the Army.
Your voice,
a branch of the Army and Navy.
Your voice crops up on literally hundreds of Armed Forces Radio rebroadcasts as a collector of the old shows.
Oh, really?
We have a lot from Armed Forces.
Yeah.
And
I did a lot of the announcing on
some
of them.
Yeah, we just say this is the Armed Forces Radio Network, maybe that, but it's unmistakable that's your voice there.
Yep.
Did you get involved in, what exactly were you doing with Special Services?
No, actually, Elliot Lewis and myself were the started this department of, I can't remember what we used to call it now, but what it consisted of, we took all the best commercial shows off the air, and then we had to take all the commercials out and certain editing references, and then reassemble them. And,
you started this operation?
Elliot and I did, yeah. Elliot Lewis. And he was the head of the department, actually.
Well, how did that come about? I mean,
whose
idea was to rebroadcast?
A civilian was doing it before, a fellow named Don Sharp, whom, strangely enough, I later became involved with in a show that I did with my wife, Ida DePino, in 1958-59.
Mm-hmm.
But he'd started it himself, and then we took it over, Elliot and I, and then the department, of course, became enlarged. And anyway, that's what I did, and then I went over to Saipan as a correspondent for the Armed Forces Radio Service. I was there when the war ended, and eventually got back here and out of the service and then into Sam Spade.
Just that easy.
It wasn't that easy, no.
How did you get into Sam Spade? Were you doing freelance acting?
I was a freelance actor, and I'd worked with Bill Speer, who did Suspense, as you probably remember, and they were auditioning for this new show. They thought kind of a Bogart type, and I guess I was the one that they thought sounded more like what they wanted. So
did you feel that you were a Bogart type?
No. I did what I wanted to, my own stuff, and it got into a very pleasant 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, it was a long long time running.
Yeah.
Wild, did you get all the Wildwood cream oil you could
all I could put on my head,
The show it plays so easy, so casually, and as I said, I have a number of the tapes, and you... it seems as though there was a heck of a lot of ad-libbing.
Yeah, I did a little.
Really easy.
I did a little. Well, we had a group of people that worked together often, and we were kind of a stock company. Lorene Tuttle played Effie, of course, and then she doubled as the old landlady and a lot of other characters. She's marvelous. And we had all the top people in the business, Johnny McIntyre, Jeanette Nolan, Ted Reed, to name a few.
Did this come out of
Hollywood?
Hollywood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The whole the whole time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now you.
The Spade was set in San Francisco. Everybody used to think we were in San Francisco, but
like One Man's Family. They talked about that coming out of San Francisco.
But actually, it was here. Yeah.
Right. You.
At one time, One Man's Family did come from San Francisco.
The very beginning of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. You were introduced on the screen in the film Brute Force.
Yeah.
As Radio Sam
Radio
Spade.
Radio Sam Spade,
said right up in the credits.
That sort of annoyed me at the time because I just, you know, I didn't feel that should be, I thought they should just let me come on as Howard Duff and let it go at that. But as I look back on it, why knock it? What the heck?
That was it.
If it'll bring a few more people into the box office, great.
That was a good motion picture debut. Was that indeed the first time?
That's
you
the first time I was ever in the. Well, I did a training film for the Army, but that you can't count that. You know, I did played a soldier or something in the for Capra's unit, Frank Capra's unit, which is right next to us in the Armed Forces Radio Service in the old Fox lot.
But it was all out here then, wasn't it?
That was out here, the Armed Forces Radio Service, yeah. But then we had stations all over the world, and I ended up on Saipan when the war... did I say that before?
Yeah,
I can't remember.
Yeah, Saipan.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's where I was when the war stopped.
We're going to bounce around a little bit. When you were with Armed Forces Radio, did you have anything to do with the big variety shows that were produced primarily for armed forces?
No, that was another department. That was
some other area.
Most of those were done by fellows who had been producing shows, like the big variety shows at the time, Bob Welch, people like that, and the high price writers, Jack Benny's writers, Bill Morrow, and we had all the greatest talent, to draw from in the whole world, right?
You know, by doing what you did, editing those shows and putting them on disc for play around the world, you actually contributed to the saving of thousands and thousands of radio shows.
I did?
Because you see, the networks never preserve the radio shows. I mean, they were all done live. Nobody bothered to record.
All that acetate was destroyed.
Right, they went out. And AFRS put these things, you edited out the commercials and you put them on the discs, and then the discs were shipped all over the world.
Sure.
Long after the war, long after radio really had kind of moved out of the picture as it was, as we knew it in those 30s and 40s, some of these discs were found by GIs who grew up listening to those shows, and they made tapes of them and sent them back home. And if it wouldn't have been for, that's probably the best thing that ever came out of World War II was the fact that those old radio shows.
Yeah, I wasn't really aware of that. I was wondering where somebody said, "Gee, I heard one of your old shows on the air," and I said, "Well, I don't know where anybody would get a hold of it." Of a recording, because I asked CBS at one time, if they had
anything.
No, they destroyed them all, because I don't even have one lousy acetate from all those years.
I'll send you a tape.
Thank you.
If you'd like.
I appreciate it. Yeah, somebody did send me a tape, excuse me, a little while ago, but isn't it strange that after all those shows I made, I haven't one acetate to show for it?
Well, there's lots of people who remember those, though. And so I just wanted to make a point about the discs that were
saved. Yeah, well, that is interesting.
That really made it.
Because the networks didn't have any interest in preserving them. So,
no. And then
the Armed Forces Radio Service did.
Right. As TV came in on the scene, the networks were just, they needed space for all the bulky equipment. They would have a room with a lot of discs, maybe, to get rid of those things. We knew that sort of business. You know?
Right.
And the military, who would ever authorize the destruction of discs? The army,
don't destroy anything, right?
Wouldn't destroy anything.
Yeah.
So they kept it.
Would you hand me that, please? Thank you. Now let's see. Survey, survive, Susanna, suspect. Ah, here we are. Suspense, meaning held in doubt, expressing doubt. The state of being uncertain, undecided, or insecure. State of anxious expectation or waiting for information, such as to keep one in suspense. Therefore, delay acquainting him with what he is eager to know.
Suspense! An hour of suspense now. A full 60 minutes at this time. And with the distinguished actor-director Robert Montgomery as your host. Tonight, our star is Howard Duff, famous wherever radio is heard as Sam Spade, detective. And as Spade, he will appear in The Candy Tooth, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed by William Spear.
This is Robert Montgomery. My pleasure and privilege it is to be here during this hour each week as a sort of guide, philosopher, and fiend, an accessory before and after the facts of crime and punishment, which calculatedly fill our minutes with suspense. This evening, before we chat a little about the private life of America's favorite private eye, let me, on behalf of Mr. Spear and all of us, thank you sincerely for your wonderful letters and telegrams expressing appreciation and interest in this new full-hour presentation. It's wonderful fun to have 60 minutes to play with in radio drama. In our new double-strength, king-size format, we plan to bring you radio plays based on complete novels and on theatrical productions and pictures. Many of the best writers of this literature, James M. Cain, Dashiell Hammett, Raymond Chandler, Graham Greene, Eric Ambler, and Agatha Christie, have been happiest with a more spacious canvas upon which to display their characters of passion and purpose. With a full hour for our theater of thrills, we can give these authors a full stage on which to have their people play out their lusts and desires, their temptations and frustrations, their frantic fears and villainous triumphs, their descent into black and terror-laden bewilderment. Sometimes we find ourselves locked in the tortured brain of the scheming criminal. At other times, we know the dread of the hunted and hapless victim. But always the basic ingredient of suspense is not mechanical gadgetry, not the detectable piecing out of fingerprints and convenient clues, but always the basic ingredient is people. For people give us emotion, and emotion marks the high drama that cold logic can never achieve. Nowhere will you find stranger people, motives, and situations than those that pass through the door of a little office in San Francisco's Post Street. The lettering on the door reads, Samuel Spade, Private Investigations. Once it read Spade and Archer, but that was before Miles Archer stopped a bullet and plunged Sam Spade into the greatest detective adventure of modern times, the search for the Maltese Falcon. It was literally a shot heard round the world, for it brought into prominence the name of Dashiell Hammett and the so-called hard-boiled school of crime detection. Since then, the fictional private eye has become a national institution. But Sam Spade still rules the roost. In book sales, in motion pictures, The Maltese Falcon has been filmed 4 times now. And now on the air, every Sunday night, in The Adventures of Sam Spade, starring Howard Duff and produced by our very own Bill Spear. It's a great pleasure for me to introduce to our suspense audience now a young star from my home lot, Universal International, in the role with which he has become so closely identified that most of his fan mail is addressed to Sam Spade. Howard Duff.
Thanks, Bob. I'd like to go on record right now as saying that any checks I may sign with the name Sam Spade will be accepted at your own risk.
The detective business has been pretty good lately, I hear. How much did Sam make during 1947?
Effie would know.
Ah.
But no matter how much it was, it won't change Sam. He'll still do business at the same old stand in a rickety office building on Post Street where the elevator seldom ever works and the janitor never ever works.
As a matter of fact, I got into my Philip Marlowe pants this morning and did little Spade work on Spade myself.
Mm-hmm.
Don't stop me if I'm wrong, but here are some of the facts. F-A-X, facts. The way I dug them up. Age? Nobody talked. History? Mysterious, but was probably a Pinkerton man to start with. Height? 6 feet and a small chunk. Weight, enough muscle to go with his height. Hair, dim out blonde. Eyes, yellow-gray. Unmarried. Lives alone in a small furnished apartment within walking distance of his office. Is economical to the point of, never takes a cab where streetcars can get, and has been known to walk where they can't get. Secretary, Effie Perrine. The only person who really knows what makes Sam tick when he wants her to. Otherwise, he's a lonely man who trusts no one, lives alone, and loves alone, and expects others to like it. Have I left anything out?
Nothing you left out, Bob. Something you put in. It's not true that I don't trust anybody. I trust everybody. All my clients are honest until I prove them otherwise.
Maybe that's what's kept you in the private eye business all these years.
That and the strong hatred that I have.
Hatred?
Yeah, for time clocks and the hours between 9 and 5. That's why I went into business for myself, and that's what keeps me there.
Then you regard it as a business, Sam, and not as an adventure. Hmm?
Well, when you break an arm in an adventure, the cost of setting it is not tax deductible. In a business, it is.
Yes, I see. How many cases have you had? And do you think all private dicks are clever?
Well, I've had so many cases I can't remember them all. About being clever, I once knew an operative who, while looking for pickpockets at Santa Anita Racetrack, had his wallet stolen. He later became a lieutenant of detectives in Glendale.
Sam, tell me, what was the most surprising thing that ever happened to you?
The most surprising thing that ever happened to me was in 1936 in Washington, D.C. I met a young lady on a bus who did not remark that my work must be very interesting.
Well, that's very interesting.
Thanks a lot. But I guess my most exciting caper since the Maltese Falcon was the hugger-mugger over the candy tooth. Usually when I wind a caper, I call Effie just to let her know I'm okay before I hustle down to the office to dictate my report to the client. But this time it was 4:30 in the morning before I could get to a phone. The reason was that I was in jail. Wake up, Angel. You're home in bed, not at the office.
Huh? Sam, is that you, Sam?
Mm-hmm.
What time is it?
4:30 in the morning.
Are you up already?
Effie, pull yourself together. Get dressed. Hustle down to the city jail.
Oh, Sam, what happened?
Well, that's what I got to get on the record now while I'm still alive to do it. Grab a taxi and hustle on down. Bring a book, pencils, the encyclopedia that has the letter K in it, and any old $20,000 you got laying around.
Sam, where am I going to get pencils? Sam, I hurried just as fast as I could. There was no taxi around. What are you doing in jail?
My apartment's being redecorated. Did you bring your book?
Well, of course I did. And pencils, too. But you're here on a murder charge, Sam. Whatever could have happened to you?
Take it down, Effie.
But, Sam, what did you do?
The San Francisco Homicide Bureau. Attention, Detective Lieutenant Dundee. Date, fill it in.
I will.
From Samuel Spade, license number 137596. Subject, the candy tooth caper. Dear Dundee, I don't know all the answers, not yet. But what I do know is going down on paper while I'm still alive to get it there.
Oh, Sam.
The scenario runs something like this. This morning, a telegram came to my office. It was addressed to Samuel Spade, Esquire, and it was signed Casper Gutman. Gutman, the fat man. So far as I knew, Dundee, when you closed your books on the Maltese Falcon Capers 7 years ago, Gutman was entered as dead. First, I thought the telegram was somebody's idea of a joke. But when I read it through the second time, I knew it was no joke. There's nobody else who thinks or talks or writes like Casper Gutman.
My dear Mr. Spade, you will no doubt receive with mixed emotions the news of my imminent reappearance in the city of the Golden Gate. Hence the companion dispatch of a telegraphic draft in the amount of $1,000, which you are free to convert into coin of the realm. This trifling sum, sir, is merely a token of my esteem for a man of many resources and nice judgments. And for it, I do not require any specific service. However, if you feel so disposed, sir, you are free to accept my considered advice in the matter of an invidious pair of rogues. To wit, one Lawrence Laverne, DDS, and or Hope Laverne, whose charms and aliases are far too myriad to enumerate in this necessarily abbreviated communication. Should either or both of these persons approach you, beware the hidden tooth. Believe me, sir, they are untruthful, unreliable, and totally devoid of all moral sensibilities. I count upon you to make no commitments to them or anyone else until you have heard my proposition. This I hope to lay before you when I arrive in San Francisco this very evening. Dear Joel, sends regards. I remain your obedient servant, Casper Gutman.
Casper Gutman, the fat man. I know, Dundee, you figured I didn't get hurt much the last time I tangled with Gutman over the Maltese Falcon. But that's because you didn't know Bridget O'Shaughnessy as well as I did. As well or as warmly. Well, I figured if Gutman was still in the land of the living, let him come. This time I wasn't going to get hurt in any way. There couldn't be two Bridges. Nevertheless, I ate a can of spinach, which I found on Effie's desk. Then I sat down again, facing the door. Nothing much happened for almost 10 minutes. I was still trying to dig the meaning out of Gutman's double talk, and I'd gotten about as far as his warning about a hidden tooth when Effie ushered a man into my office.
Mr. Spade. Well, I must say that you are indeed a pleasant surprise, but pleasant.
You've said it. What can I do for you?
My name is Laverne. Larry, Lawrence Laverne.
How do you do?
I shall spare you the tiresome details and plunge right into the problem. Oh, dear. At the Hotel Royal George, there is a mildewed creature, but mildewed, registered as Mr. Herman Julius. Oh, a really frightful person.
Very frightful, huh?
Oh, the kiss of death department. The only thing about this creature that has any charm is a four-tooth lower bridge in his right jaw. Now, Mr. Spade, I want you to get that bridge for me.
I'm sorry. It sounds as though you're saying I want you to get that bridge for me.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Because he refuses to pay me for it.
You're a dentist?
I prefer to regard myself as a dentist sculpturer. I created this bridge for Mr. Julius with infinite pains. And now he refuses to pay me. I ask payment and he accuses me of acting without charm.
Mr. Julius wouldn't happen to be a very large, fat man?
Oh, contraire. Skin and bones. Well, Mr. Spade?
I'm afraid you come to the wrong man, Mr. Laverne. What you want is a lawyer to sue him.
Sue him? Months of legal wrangling? Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. I intend to be vindictive about this. I am by nature a very gracious and charming person. But now let him beware. I shall have that bridge from Herman Julius, even if you must knock him down and wrench it from his jaw.
Uh-huh. You tried knocking him down yourself?
Oh, I could never even bring myself to perform extractions. I always send those patients to less sensitive dentists.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid you'll have to find yourself a less sensitive private detective.
Oh, dear. Well, Mr. Spade, what would you advise me to do?
Mr. Laverne, I would advise you to get out of California before Walt Disney sees you.
Well, good day, sir. I would like very much to have you in my chair someday. Oh, might teach you some manners.
Mm-hmm. Beware the hidden tooth.
Hello.
Hello. please sit down, Miss...
Thank you. Laverne. Hope Laverne.
Miss Laverne?
Yes.
What can I do for you?
Well, I'm looking for my brother.
Missing?
Well, yes and no. I mean, he's been gone since yesterday, and I'm terribly afraid he'll get into trouble.
Oh? What kind of trouble?
Well, you see, it just isn't easy for me to talk about this, Mr. Spade.
Well, now, Miss Laverne, suppose you just lean back in that chair, close your eyes, and...
Yes, thank you. Yes, it's easier like this.
Mm-hmm. I thought you'd like.
My brother's name is Lawrence. He's a man of 52. He's not well. I mean, he gets spells, and he acts peculiarly. He suffered a nervous breakdown some years ago, and he spent most of his life in sanitariums.
Where are you from, Miss Laverne?
Kansas City. During the past year, Larry was in a rest home in Palo Alto, and I arrived 2 days ago to take him home. Yesterday morning, I don't know how it happened, but he's gone.
These spells you mentioned, what are they like?
Oh, well, he assumes different personalities. His favorite seems to be that of a dentist. He becomes obsessed by the thought that he's done some work, a bridge or something, for someone who refuses to pay him. He'll walk up to a perfect stranger and create a scene. He's been arrested a few times, nothing serious, public nuisance. Mr. Spade, I'm afraid that he'll be put away if he's arrested once more.
I see, and you want me to look for him.
Then he hasn't been here.
Why'd you think he'd come here?
Oh, that's another one of his tactics. He goes to a private detective, hires him to either follow a man or get back the work he thinks he's done. Dental work, you know.
But what made you think he'd come to me?
Oh, well, not you, particularly. But since yesterday, I've tried almost every private detective in San Francisco. No one has seen him.
Who'd you talk to?
I beg your pardon?
These private detectives. Who'd you see?
Oh. Well, there was a man named Graham, and one named Marlowe, Philip Marlowe.
Excuse me. Would you like a drink?
No. Thank you.
Marlowe speaking.
That's Spade, Phil.
Hiya, Sam.
Phil, you got a rumble on a missing brother named Larry Laverne?
Yeah. Gal was in early this morning.
Hmm?
Brother's some kind of a screwball.
You meet him?
No, hasn't been around yet.
Ah, thanks, Phil. See you.
Why did you do that, Mr. Spade?
It's doing things like that that have kept me alive and in business all these years. That was Marlowe. Your brother hasn't been to him.
I told you that.
But your brother has been here.
When?
A few minutes before you came in. Can't see how you missed him.
What did he tell you, Mr. Spade?
Pretty much as you outlined it.
About the dental work. And some man owing him money.
Yeah, some man named Julius. Herman Julius, he said. You know him?
I never heard of him. He's probably just another figment of Larry's imagination. Mr. Spade, I'm terribly worried about Larry.
I got that impression.
Will you try to find him for me?
Can you give me any idea where I might start looking?
Well, I think I know how Larry's mind works when he's in the midst of one of these spells, and if you find this Mr. Julius, you'll probably find Larry close by.
So you want me to find Mr. Julius first?
Oh, well, I only thought it would be simpler checking on this Mr. Julius' movements than on Larry's unpredictable whims, you see. Don't you think that makes good sense, Mr. Spade?
Miss Laverne told me she was staying at the Pickwick Arms, and I said I would call her if I found her brother, and she said, thank you very much, and I said, it's nothing, just part of the day's routine, and then she kissed me and left. After lunch, I strolled over to the Royal George Hotel. Duke, the housekeeper, gave me a rundown on Mr. Julius, a quiet, nervous little man who'd sealed himself up in his room for 2 days, eating out of room service. I didn't have any trouble finding the hacky who'd driven him away when he checked out. He gave me the address, and 20 minutes later, I was mounting the front steps of a greasy rooming house on Sacramento Street. I twisted the rusty bell in the door, and a long, sharp nose that could only belong to a landlady stabbed out at me.
What you want?
I'm looking for a man named Herman Julius.
Don't have no Julius here.
Well, maybe he gave some other name. A little skinny guy with a foreign accent.
You the Lord?
Take me to his room.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Now. Well, step inside. Upstairs.
He home?
Never seen him go out. Ain't for one door. Watch that step, second from the top. It's busted. Don't want no lawsuits.
It's the third.
Said he was a refuge. And Nazis were after him. Another flight. Never knew he was in a tangle with the Lord. Smell that?
Certainly do.
Cooking in the rooms. Oh, I've got a rule, too. Sneaking electric plates, they do. Runs up the bills. Buzzards. Here's his room. Mr. Julius! Mr. Julius! Mr. Julius, you second there? They drink, some of them. Then the dope cook in their room, they drink. Get DT, some of them. Oh, go on in and get him. I don't want no part of it.
I didn't see who it was right away. His face was the color and consistency of crushed strawberries. I helped him up and over to the wash basin in the corner of the room. With his face washed, he looked a little better, but he still looked like Larry Laverne.
Oh, am I ever glad to see you. I thought it was them coming back to kill me.
Did you find Julius?
No. Got away, the wretch, down the fire escape as I came in.
Who did this to you, a big fat man?
Oh, to tell the honest truth, Mr. Spade, I never even got a good look at him. He was all over me before.
Who's Julius? What's in his bridge work?
Oh, I'll tell you everything, but please, first, let's get out of this horrid room. Oh, smells like cabbage.
Larry Laverne was tougher than he looked. After the going over he'd gotten, you or I would have been hospital bound, Dundee. But he did a late take. We were on the way back to his hotel, walking toward Market, when he crumpled in the middle like a sack of flour. I grabbed him and held him upright, looked wildly around for somewhere to park him. We were standing in front of a newsreel theater. I bought 2 tickets and piloted him inside. We sat down. I undid his clutch in my arm and concentrated on the screen. The subject that followed the football game was some big Oriental celebration somewhere in India or someplace. A very fancy parade with white elephants.
Candy, Ceylon. The famed white elephants of the Orient get their annual airing as crowds of devout Buddhists gather to do homage to some of the strangest relics in the modern world. Here in Candy, the Mecca of the Buddhist religion, pilgrims gather from near and far. Indian rajahs, Burmese officials, and Chinese dignitaries in ceremonial dress prostrate themselves before the jeweled casket containing the most sacred object of the Buddhist world, legendary relic of Buddha himself. as the Orient goes wild in jubilant celebration. Temple dancers of candy perform for the crowned heads of the Orient.
Take me out of here. I can't stand it. I'll go mad. I tell you, stark raving mad.
Oh, take it easy. You're annoying the customers.
You brought me in here on purpose. You're trying to drive me crazy, but crazy.
Easy, easy.
Listen to me.
Two men
if
holding up the sacred relics are high priests.
If that man says that one word, candy, just once more, I won't be responsible. I tell you, I won't be responsible.
All right, Larry.
Take me out of here.
The end, but the end. Oh, you got me doing it. Come
An
on,
impressive
let's get
ceremony,
here.
Indeed.
I promise you, Mr. Spade, all I need is just one night's sleep and I'll be a new man.
Yeah.
Why, I haven't even dared to take 40 winks since I arrived in this town for fear those monsters might murder me in my bed.
Yeah, I know. It's tough. Sit down.
So this is your apartment?
That's what I laughingly call it. Living room, bedroom, ice box. Here, have a drink. Me too.
Oh, thanks. Oh. Oh, did I ever need that.
Help yourself to the bottle.
I don't touch alcohol as a rule, but after what I've been through...
Well, now, drink all you like. You deserve it.
Oh, thank you. Well, I hardly know where to begin. It's all so strange. And there I was in Lisbon, Mr. Spade, the only English-speaking dentist worthy of a name in the entire diplomatic colony. Well, you must have read in the papers about Dom Constantino's tomb being violated. It was the scandal of the season. Oh, it sounds so horrible, Mr. Spade. I just can't
talk about it. Try a little more of this. Settles the nerves.
Oh, I just don't know how I can ever thank you. Ever since I hit this burg, I've been feeling like the forgotten... Pardon. Man.
Yeah, you were saying something about a tomb being broken into. In Portugal, this was?
Yes. Well, you know, the draft board just took one look at me and...
I know what you mean.
So I just stayed on in Lisbon and... Well, you know how people gossip, having patients of all nationalities and all that, you
know? Yeah, I get it. Between the Nazis and the Allies, you were quite a social lion.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Don't get the idea I was a spy. Oh, no. But sometimes people had things that could be hidden in a hollow tooth and like that, bridge work, you know? I think I told you I'm not so much a dentist as a dental artist.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that fat Mr. Gutman brought me this tooth, you see.
Gutman?
Yes, Mr. G and that Joel Cairo person that was with him. Well, they brought me this tooth. Oh, a horrid yellow old thing, practically a fang. They wanted to put in Mr. Julius Bridge. Mm-hmm. Paid me £1,000, can you imagine? Then when I learned what they had done, well, it made me positively ill. This practically sacred old tomb in the cathedral, they'd broken in and literally torn out a piece of his jawbone.
Whose?
Why, Dom Constantino's.
And who's Dom Constantino?
Oh, the Portuguese viceroy. It didn't hurt him any. He's been dead 500 years, if he's dead a day. Ooh. Oh, dear. I'm as tight as a tick. This liquor is getting to me.
And it was. I thought he'd open up some more, but I overplayed the bourbon. Half a bottle later, he passed out. I flopped on the sofa and tried to get some sleep for myself, but my dreams kept getting in the way. I had newsreel dreams in Technicolor. I dreamed that a white elephant with a face like Casper Gutman was leading a parade down Market Street. The howdah that was strapped to his back looked like a dentist chair. Herman Julius was sitting in it, but this face seemed to be blanked out. Joel Cairo, wearing a surgeon's gown and a turban, was drilling Julius's tooth. The crowds were throwing diamonds and rubies from the peanut bags they were carrying, and Gutman vacuumed them up with his trunk. That was when the bells started ringing in the Buddhist temple that had been built on top of the Mark Hopkins. Yeah.
Mr. Spade.
Yeah?
Mr. Spade, I need your help.
Who's this?
Hope Laverne, please, Mr. Spade. I'm terrified.
Where are you?
I'm in a drugstore at 5th and Mission.
Near the bus depot?
Yes, please, come at once, Mr. Spade.
Well, can't you come here?
I can't. I don't dare go into the street.
All right, wait there. I'm on my way. I took a quick gander at Laverne, saw he was still out cold, slipped into my topcoat and left the apartment. I figured it would take me 11 minutes to hustle over to 5th and Mission. But I never got any further than 50 yards from the front of my building. I sensed him behind me, wheeled suddenly, bumped him into a doorway, held the thumbs of his hands gripped tightly in my fists. Stand still or I'll tear him off.
Well, no. I'll kill you.
Don't move and it won't hurt.
You filthy beast.
The boy twisted suddenly and violently, and I heard the crack of his left thumb breaking. He swallowed a scream, dashed out into the deserted street. I went after him, turned into the alley, and caught the butt of a gun behind my right ear. I don't know how long I was out, but I do know I came to at least 3 hours too soon. I needed much more rest. I opened my eyes, steadied a swaying ceiling, and then I heard his voice.
Well, sir, this is indeed a jolly reunion.
It couldn't be, but it was. Casper Gutman, the fat man of the Maltese Falcon Caper. Looking at the unholy trio there in the room, Joel Cairo, the little Levantine, still as oily and smiling as ever and still fragrant. Marvin, a sullen, white-faced, hollow-eyed youth, as near Wilmer's double as anyone will ever see. And Gutman, spruce as ever in his black cutaway coat, black vest, and gray striped trousers. You'd have thought nothing had happened since then, not even the war. The grayness at Cairo's temples only made his baby face look more babyish. And about Gutman, nothing was different except his watch chain. A curious jewel-encrusted ornament dangled from it, shaped like a claw.
You seem surprised to see me, sir. And no wonder. It's always disconcerting to encounter a ghost, especially such a substantial ghost. A lot of water has gone under the bridge since last we met, eh?
Under the bridge?
Yes, which brings us to the subject at hand, the bridge.
My headaches. What about the bridge?
First, we'll talk a bit. After all, this is quite an occasion, sir. Reunion of old friends, eh, Mr. Spade?
Yeah. Tell me, did you ever find the Falcon, if you'll excuse the expression?
Your eyes are resting on all that remains of that fabulous bird, sir.
Yes, that trinket on his watch chain. All the remains of the Maltese Falcon.
Well, mark you, sir, what part of it survived. The claw. You believe in omens?
Right now, I'm ready to believe almost anything.
Indeed, sir. Well, no need for dissembling. We're old and wiser, I trust, than in the days of the Falcon. Suffice it to say, the unsavory and bloated object which the police dredged up from San Francisco Bay and identified as myself was some other poor soul. Wilmer, I am happy to say, remembered the debt of gratitude he owed me, and at the last moment agreed to be a party to the very necessary little deception. That is, since they had him cold, as you detectives say, for the other killings, he might as well confess to murdering me. He did so in exchange for my agreement to take care of his family in a financial way. An investment, by the way, which has paid rich dividends.
How's that?
Oh, indeed. Oh, well, thanks to it, I now have Marvin, Wilmer's younger brother.
I thought I noticed a family resemblance.
Shut up!
Oh, yes, yes, poor Wilmer. He was like a son to me, like a son.
Well, it didn't stop you from making him a patsy.
I detest killing Mr. Spade. I cautioned Wilmer time and again. But he was so headstrong. A mere boy.
You'd better caution this punk or he won't last to take any raps for you.
I'll break
now,
his head
now,
wide
Marvin,
open.
Marvin.
That dirty shamus lays another hand on me. I'll kill him.
No, Marvin. Joel, take Marvin into the other room. Explain to him that Mr. Spade and I are very old friends.
Casper knows best, Marvin. Come with me.
And now, no nonsense, you two now.
Someday I'll kill him.
Marvin, Casper will be angry.
Oh, dear. Hot-headed runs in that family.
Yeah. Well, let's have it, Gutman. What are you after this time?
My dear boy, you misjudge me. It's true I had Marvin check up on you, but only because of your association with Miss Laverne. Oh, no matter now. I'm weary of the chase. All the way from Candy, I... What did the girl tell you?
She asked me to find her brother, a dentist named Laverne.
You believed her story?
No.
Most unscrupulous woman. No veracity, no regard for truth whatsoever. Her true motive? Merely to make trouble for me and my friends because of her association with Kemidov. Aye, the Russian's hand again, Mr. Spade.
Kemidov? Did I ever meet Kemidov?
You'd hardly forget if you had. In short, here is my proposition. Another $1,000, coin of the realm, sir, for which you will refund whatever money Miss Laverne gave you and send her packing.
The bidding starts at $10,000.
You drive a hard bargain, Mr. Spade. Very well, I'll meet your terms.
I told you the bidding starts there.
And where does it stop?
Half of whatever the caper nets you. I deliver Julius, you do the rest.
Well, between you and me, Mr. Spade, I'm not as affluent as I once was. The Falcon pretty well wiped me out financially. Considering the time and money I've already invested in trying to track down the weasel Julius.
What's in Julius's bridge work?
And if I don't choose to tell you?
Then it's no dice. Think it over, Gutman. Either I'm in all the way for half, or I deliver Julius to the other outfit.
And that is your final dictum, sir?
Take it or leave it. Either you're in or you're out.
Good night, Mr. Spade. I trust you will call me on the telephone when you reach your diggings and tell me that you've changed your mind. No hard feelings.
The fog was clearing and only a few white wisps of it were clinging to Twin Peaks when I walked home that morning. It was too late to worry about Hope. Or did she phone for Gutman to decoy me out so that I started walking faster? As I climbed the stairs to my apartment, I heard a door open on the landing, and the slot of light that stabbed out from it showed me it was my door. The light came from behind whoever had opened it, and I couldn't see who it was at first, only that it was not Larry Laverne. I took the last flight, four steps at a time.
Hello, Sam.
Dundee, what's happened?
Come in and see for yourself.
What I saw for myself, I wish somebody else had seen for me. Hysterical Larry was lying on his back on my bedroom floor. His eyes were wide open, and he had a crooked grin on his face. A very crooked grin. Whoever had killed him had wrenched his jaw out of place.
I'm not saying you killed him, Sam. I'm only asking you who did.
Don't be a child, Dundee.
Why was he killed?
No statement.
What was he doing here? Who is he?
The name he gave was Laverne. I let him flop here because he's afraid to go home.
Afraid of who?
A man named Casper Gutman.
What?
Yeah, Gutman.
Quit stalling, Sam. Gutman's dead and you know it.
You bury him, Dundee?
Sam, I believe you mean it.
Where Gutman's concerned, it doesn't pay to kid around.
What's he after now?
The bridge work out of a man's mouth. The man's name is Julius.
What's in this Julius bridge work? Maltese Falcon?
Something like that.
I'm sorry, Sam. It's not good enough. I'll have to take you in.
So you took me and you booked me. Bail was set at $20,000. You saw to that. You figure there's only one operator who'd put up that kind of money to spring me, and that's Casper Gutman. I hope you're right. Period. And the first part, at least, of sob story.
But, Sam, what is in Herman Julius's bridge work?
Well, Laverne told me it was a tooth Gutman stole out of a skeleton in an old Portuguese catacomb.
What's so valuable about that?
I don't know.
Could be a jewel inside of it?
No, it's not Gutman's kind of game. Besides, the thing that made poor Laverne blow his top in that newsreel theater was something more like an elephant tusk.
Oh.
Where's that encyclopedia? Did you bring it?
Oh, yes, I did, Sam. Yes, I did. Wasn't I smart?
Look it up.
Look what up?
Candy, with a K.
Oh. K. Ka. Can. Oh, here it is. Candy. K. Isn't that funny? City. Capital of Central Province of Ceylon. Located near the center of the island north...
Spare me the geography.
Well, the railroad from Colombo. Noted for its waterfalls and stuff and stuff and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Is, the city surrounds an artificial lake and is sacred to Buddhists for its temple of Maligawa, which enshrines the tooth of Buddha brought, according to legend...
What? Let me see that.
Don't grab.
Let me see. Sacred to Buddhists for its temple of Maligawa, which enshrines it. Effie.
What's the matter, Sam?
The tooth of Buddha.
Sam, you don't think that's what's in Herman Julius's bridge work?
If it was, Gutman would be after him.
But how did he get to Portugal?
If it did, Gutman's the man that could track it down.
Sam, you sure of that?
No, Angel. No. The only thing I am sure of is this. When the Maltese Falcon laid an egg, it hatched a flock of vultures, and they're all circling right around my head.
Well, cheer up, Sam. You won't be in jail long. I'll bring you a cake with a file in it.
Angel.
No, devil's food.
In tonight's full hour of suspense, Howard Duff, our star, appears as Sam Spade, with Joseph Kearns as Casper Gutman, in William Spear's production of The Candy Tooth. Tonight's study in suspense. In just a moment, we will return with the second half of The Candy Tooth. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. And now, back to our Hollywood soundstage and Robert Montgomery.
At the point at which we interrupted Sam Spade's narrative just now, things were at a pretty pass.
A pretty pass indeed.
A pretty pass. Sam wound up with the body of the dentist, Larry Laverne, in his apartment. The girl, Hope, waiting for him in the bus station. Casper Gutman, the fat man, waiting for an answer to his ultimatum that Spade produce the tooth or else.
Me in city prison under $20,000 bail, and the fabulous candy tooth still chumping on two-bit hamburgers in the bridge work of a very elusive man named Herman Julius.
Yes. And?
Well, after I dictated my report to Effie on what had happened until then, she left and I laid down to think. Lieutenant Dundee and I had agreed that I should spend the night in the pokey. He figured that the 20G bail would draw only one man to put up that much moolah to spring me, Casper Gutman. Along about 9 in the a.m., the turnkey unlocked the door of my cell. I followed him out to the desk. The 20,000 bucks were there, but no sign of benefactor, benefactress, or Samaritan of any type. The bond was in my name. I signed my release and walked out. Across the street was parked a long black limousine with the curtains drawn. I started for it when a voice at my elbow checked me.
You're Senor Spade.
Si.
I'm Dom Constantino de Braganza. He's I who have put up the $20,000.
Is that so? Well, thank you. Now, why?
I desire a service. My card, senor.
Dom Constantino de... Wait a minute.
You seem to know the name, eh?
Yeah. For a guy who's been dead 500 years, you don't look too bad.
Oh, thank you. You are referring, of course, to my illustrious ancestor, Dom Constantino, the first Portuguese viceroy of India, who indeed had been dead since the 16th century. It's on his behalf I speak to you now.
What can I do for him?
Restore the tooth which was wrenched from his skull by a pack of unspeakable ghouls who violated his tomb in Lisboa.
You think they're in San Francisco?
Let us not be naive, senor. The contemptible little dentist, Laverne, was killed in your apartment. Therefore, you must know the whereabouts of the other ghouls.
I know so many ghouls, senor. You'll have to be more specific.
I refer to a fat pig named C. Gutman and an odorous little camel named J. Cairo, and most especially to a woman of the female sex by name H. Laverne.
You want them or the tooth?
Both. Not one without the other.
No, it'll take a little time. They haven't got the tooth.
You know where it is?
In the bridge work of a man named Julius.
Oh. That then explains the dentist and the diabolical manner which they employed in smuggling the tooth out of Lisboa.
Now, you go on home and you stay there until I call you, huh?
Senor, I respect your judgment.
Thank you.
You will find me at the Hotel San Rafael, and for your retainer, you may consider the $20,000 bond as yours.
Wow.
Adios, senor.
Adios. Be careful crossing streets.
Adios.
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 Adios, Dom Constantino.
Adios.
Yeah, adios.
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 Mr. Spade. Sam. Get in.
You got a hack license, Miss Laverne?
Oh, please don't, Sam. I know this car's ridiculous, but I don't dare use taxis or be seen on the street. What did that man tell you?
What happened last night when you called me from the bus station in such a panic?
Why didn't you come?
I went to see the fat man.
You saw Gutman? Did he mention me?
You didn't make that call last night to get me out of the apartment so that somebody could get in and kill Laverne.
Oh, Sam.
Then why did you call?
Because I found Herman Julius, and I'm driving you there now.
We didn't do any talking after that. She sat very close to me. There was plenty to talk about, but we didn't do any talking after that. I was vaguely aware that we were driving across to Oakland, and a few minutes later, we pulled up in front of an apartment building. We took the elevator up to the 9th floor.
This is it, Sam. 9B.
Nobody home.
He's in there, Sam. I know he is.
Mr. Julius. Mr. Julius.
Go away. There's no Julius here.
Oh, that's his voice.
Mr. Julius, I've got to talk to you. No. It's very important. But if you don't open the door, I'll have to...
I'll kill myself.
He will, Sam. He will. You've got to stop him.
Go away.
Julius! Wait a minute.
No.
Wait, don't!
No!
It was the 9th floor he started from. Poor, frightened little Herman Julius was dead on arrival. By the time we made it downstairs, the street was cluttered with cops. I grabbed Hope by the arm, hustled her around the corner to a rented limousine, and told her I'd call her later. My next stop was the fat man himself.
Well, sir, so you reconsidered. You found Julius.
I know where he is.
And your terms, sir. What are your terms?
$100,000, cash on the line.
Oh, out of the question, Mr. Spade.
No cash, no tooth.
You found another buyer?
Yeah. A man named Constantino de Braganza says the tooth belongs in the head of his ancestor by a previous marriage.
Oh, quaint conceits are very droll. And what else did he say to you?
That he'd double any bid that you made on the tooth.
My dear fellow, have you any inkling, any remote idea of the value of that tooth? No? Well, I'll tell you, sir. But let me warn you, if I tell you, and you do not then produce the tooth...
Yeah, yeah, let's get on with it, Gutman.
Yes, well, sit down, sir. How much do you know of the 16th century history of the Orient?
Well enough to fill that tooth with.
Capital joke, sir. I shall give you a little more. Enough, say, to fill an elephant tusk.
I'm listening.
Well, sir, when the Portuguese invaded India in the 16th century and established the city of Goa, there were three main empires in the Orient, namely China, India, and Burma. And the rulers of all three empires sought to rule the world. Now, legend had it that in order to become lord of the world, a monarch had first to be the possessor of seven gems. That's gems spelled with a J, sir. Yes, gems. This is no fantasy, I'm telling you, Mr. Spade. This is actual history. Seven gems. And what were those seven gems?
You tell me.
The first six do not concern us, Mr. Spade. A golden wheel, a white elephant, all easy to come by for an oriental monarch. But the seventh. Ah, Mr. Spade, the seventh.
What was that, a tooth?
The tooth, Mr. Spade, the tooth. The sacred tooth of the great Lord Buddha himself. That remained in the temple of Maligawa at Kandy, on the island of Ceylon. Now, many kings sent armies to capture it, but all were defeated by the fierce Brahmins who stood guard at the temple gates. And so, we come to the year 1552.
It's about time.
Now, in that year, the Portuguese viceroy, Dom Constantino de Braganza, landed near Jaffna with a force of 1,220 men and defeated the king's legions in a savage battle.
Mm-hmm.
He returned to Goa with his victorious army and the tooth, which he retained as his personal prize. It was not long before the Burmese king, Bayunaung by name, sent an emissary to Dom Constantino, offering the modern equivalent of £1,000,000 as ransom for the tooth.
How'd it get to Portugal?
Oh, hear me out, sir. Hear me out.
All right.
Well, before the transaction could be consummated, the Portuguese archbishop called on Dom Constantino and, in the name of the Inquisition, demanded the tooth. After some delay, Dom Constantino, under threat of torture, delivered a tooth into the archbishop's hand, and that tooth was publicly destroyed, the archbishop grinding it into powder with mortar and pestle and scattering the residue upon a fire, that the tooth might be utterly consumed. Shortly after this, Dom Constantino's personal physician, after drawing a tooth, now mind you, a tooth, from the viceroy's head, died under very mysterious circumstances. We may safely infer that the substitute tooth which he drove into the viceroy's jawbone, after the primitive fashions of dentistry in those days, was the candy tooth, put there for safekeeping until Dom Constantino could resume negotiations with Bayunaung's emissary.
But,
before that could be accomplished, Dom Constantino was stricken with the plague, carried aboard ship, and home to Portugal, where he died. He was entombed with the candy tooth still in his head. Now, the manuscript which fell into the possession of the Russian Kemidov and later into mine, but I shall not go into unnecessary detail...
Of course not.
...was Dom Constantino's deathbed confession, proving beyond the shadow of a doubt that the real Candy Tooth had reposed for more than four centuries not in the great temple at Candy in Ceylon, but in a Portuguese tomb.
Yeah, well, I think I can take it from there. You still haven't told me what my percentage is.
Well, my dear boy, if your percentage were 0.1% of what can be realized on that tooth, you could retire to a life of sloth and luxury for the rest of your days. For the restoration of the true relic, there is no limit to what the Buddhist world could and would pay. Gifts and tribute paid to one temple alone exceed $11 million a year. Now, my boy, you begin to comprehend something of its value?
I'll still settle for cash.
Very well, then. $10,000.
It's a deal.
You understand, Mr. Spade. Now that you have my secret, the affair must be gotten over quickly, for good and all. If it is not, believe me, this time I shall not bargain with you for my life. You shall bargain with me for yours.
Well, After I left Gutman, I called you, Dundee, and found out by a clever ruse where Herman Julius's body had been sent. You told me. Then I hustled on over to the mortuary. As I walked in, a hushed young man wearing a hushed cutaway and a hushed expression greeted me.
Good evening, sir. I'm Converse Etheridge. Can I be of service?
Thank you. I've come to pay my last respects to an old friend. Can I be alone with him for a few minutes?
His name?
Julius. Herman Julius?
Oh, yes, yes. His widow is here, sir. Mrs. Julius.
His widow, huh?
Yes, she's inconsolable. Perhaps, as a dear friend of the departed, you might give her words of comfort. Please go in.
Thank you. A little woman in black was sobbing quietly to herself. She turned around when she heard me come in. Her eyes lit up with hatred, and suddenly she grabbed something from her pocketbook and held it at me. It was a .45, and her hand was shaking.
Yeah, this time I will do it. Always before I didn't have the heart. Always hating bloodshed. But this time, yeah, this time!
Nick, Frau Julius, Freund.
You are not one of them.
No, I'm a detective. I want to punish the people responsible for your husband's death.
Yeah, I believe you. This gun, I was going to follow poor Hermann. There didn't seem to be any reason for going on.
Tell me something about yourself and your husband, Mrs. Julius.
It's an old story now. Years of separation in different concentration camps. Bribery and bribery. Then my children and I, we were finally released. Came to this country. After 2 years, Hermann brought us from Lisbon. We knew soon he would be with us. But even though the war was finished, they had lost. Still they went after Hermann Julius. He knew the Nazis were behind him all the time. And even here, in this country, he did not dare come to me.
Mrs. Julius, you see, those people that followed your husband this time weren't Nazis. They weren't even after him. They were after something he was carrying. In Lisbon, didn't he go to a dentist named Laverne?
Oh, yeah. And that's...
Didn't Laverne put an odd-shaped tooth, kind of yellow, into his bridge work?
Yeah.
So he smuggled the candy tooth out of Portugal and in the... Never even knew it.
Oh, well, it does not matter now. Poor Hermann is dead. Surely they will leave his poor broken body in peace.
I doubt it very much, Mrs. Julius.
No, surely they will.
That's why I want to make a request of you. You see, others have died besides your husband because of this thing. More will die unless you do as I ask you.
Oh, to stop terror. Any terror. I will do anything, Mr. Spade. Anything you say.
I told her what I wanted done, and she agreed to do it. Then I started on my part of it. I called Gutman at the St. Mark and told him 11 at my apartment. Then I called Dom Constantino at the San Rafael. Hope and I got there around 10:30. Go on in, Angel.
This is where you live, Sam?
Where I sleep.
Must be lonely for you.
Sorry, no vacancy.
Sam, listen. There's so much I want to tell you about myself.
I'm listening.
Well, listen. Just before the war started, I was engaged to marry a man named Kemidov in London.
The Russian, yeah. Gutman mentioned him. Something about an old manuscript?
Yeah, Kemidov had stolen it. In India, it was very old, and Kemidov said that the information in it made it worth more than the Maltese Falcon. It was in Latin.
Mm-hmm. How'd the fat man get this manuscript away from Kemidov? So you double-crossed Kemenov and took the manuscript to Gutman.
Sam, before they get here, I've got to tell you something. No matter what happens, I want you to know this.
Sure, I know. Say it, Angel.
Don't torture me, Sam.
I like to hear it, Angel.
Oh, Sam, I love you so much, it feels like hate. It feels like a...
Go on. Hate me, Angel.
Darling... No, don't answer it, Sam.
Relax, Angel. You'll be okay.
Sam?
Yeah?
Only you, Sam. All I want out of... only you.
Just stay on third, Angel. I'll bat you home safe.
You see, sir, I have a punctual man.
Come on in, Gutman.
Look, the same apartment, the same colors, everything the same.
Yeah, and the same rat race, Cairo. Hello, Marvin. Killed anybody since lunch?
You want me to give it to you, Shamus?
Oh, please, please, Marvin. No unpleasant talk. Mr. Gutman, please tell Marvin.
In here, gentlemen.
Yes, 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 Marvin. Mr. Spade, I'm sure, regrets the unfortunate... Well, and what have we here?
You all know the lady?
You see, Mr. Gutman, you see, I told you. Now he's dealing with her. Oh, this is...
Shut up, you hear me? Shut up.
Don't talk to us like that. I'm jumpy. I don't feel good. I don't know what I'm...
You shut up, too.
Always fighting violence, unpleasantness. I'm getting too old for this.
Now, Mr. Spade, to the business at hand. You have the tooth.
I want some answers first. Did you have our dentist friend Laverne killed?
No.
Did Marvin kill Laverne?
No.
Cairo?
No.
Nobody killed Laverne. He died of old age.
Have you asked the little lady there?
Sam.
I gotta ask you, baby.
Oh, Sam, how could
you? Answer me.
No, Sam, you know I didn't.
Well, it doesn't matter. I got my pigeon pick to take the fall.
Oh, I don't feel so good.
Now, Marvin, retain yourself. No violence. Well, sir, I...
That's it. Sit still.
I have a package from the Avalon Mortuary for Mr. Spade. Oh, hello, sir.
Yeah, let's have it.
Mrs. Julia said to tell you...
Yeah, thanks. Well, Gutman, this is it, this little package. The candy tooth.
The tooth, at last. Give it me, sir. Give it me.
Oh, Mr. Gutman, it's all over. We've got it. We've got it.
We have. Come, sir, no more teasing.
Put those fat lunch hooks down before I chop them off.
I rather thought this wasn't all. What now, sir?
I told you there was another bidder. And here he is.
I would advise you not to reach for your gun, Mr. Spade.
You're pointing that gun at the wrong belly. The fat man's inside. Mr. Gutman, Mr. Cairo, Dom Constantino de Braganza of Portugal.
Portugal, indeed. It's the Russian.
Kemetov.
Do not be so formal, Hope, my darling. You may call Mr. Gavanovich.
All right, let's get off the Kopeck. We're all here.
You see, Mr. Gutman.
Mr. Spade, you are an unmitigated cad, sir. You knew all along this man was an imposter.
That was the name he gave me.
Well, what matter? There's enough for all.
Such a soul, Mujik. Mr. Spade, you'll please give me that package.
Now, Marvin, now!
They both had their guns into each other at once, practically. Kemetov fired first, but Marvin didn't fall. He spit out his chewing gum, then he squeezed the trigger of his .45. They both looked more surprised than anything else, but they were both very dead before they fell down.
Marvin! Marvin. Dead. As dead as Kemetov. Oh, well, it was worth it. You know, of course, it was he who killed Laverne.
I told you I had my pigeon picked for the fall.
By gad, man, you are a winner.
Poor Marvin. He looks so dead.
You can have the package now.
Oh, yes. The tooth, sir.
He seized the package with his fat little fingers. They were trembling so he could hardly undo the strings. He tore the outer wrappings, exposed a small metal jar. He looked at me and wrenched the lid off.
Yes, sir.
He dumped the contents onto the table.
The tooth, what is it? There's nothing here. But ashes, sir.
That's it, Gutman, ashes. The tooth is there, along with the rest of Herman Julius. He was cremated this afternoon.
Cremated? The tooth, it was cremated.
No, this, it cannot be, no.
But it is the tooth. Oh, you idiot. Again, you are the idiot. Why do I stay with him? Why?
Well, come, Joel. Shall we stand here weeping and bemoaning a curious quirk of fate? Or shall we defy all fates? Were we not well underway to finding the Romanov scepter when this charming lady detoured us with her romantic notions? Come. What say you, Joel, eh?
You mean we
yes.
go to...
Yes, Joel, to Samarkand.
Mr. Gutman, do not say it. He is listening.
Yes, a wise precaution. Then we go, eh?
Yes, Mr. Gutman, yes, we go.
Adieu, Mr. Spade. Oh, sound. It's like the stage of the old Vic at the final curtain of Hamlet. Alas, poor Marvin... I knew him well. Oh, well, many slip twixt the cup
in the tooth.
I let him go, Mr. Montgomery. I knew there was nothing on them that Dundee's boys could make stick. I thought twice before I let Dundee take Hope Laverne, but we both agreed it was the smart thing to do. And what do you suppose Effie said when I said, period, and a report?
Oh, Sam, for once you came out ahead. $20,000. Oh, just think of the things we can do. You pay all the bills, a year's rent on the office, have that awful old leather chair reupholstered, and a new ribbon for my typewriter.
Effie, about that typewriter ribbon.
Well, maybe I can get along on this one for a while, but Sam, I do think we should get my mother's earrings out of Moishe's pawn shop.
Effie, I know this is going to be a terrible blow to you, but...
Sam, what did you do with the $20,000?
I put it up for bail.
Bail?
Yeah.
But that was the $20,000. And you're released, so you get the money. It's very simple, Sam. You just go down and ask them for it.
Effie, you see, you don't understand these things. Now, bail is a very complex legal technicality. You see, you put up a bond, and then you...
Sam, how much was the bail for Hope Laverne?
Yeah, that's what I mean, Angel.
Oh, Sam, you're such a child. You'll never see her again. She was just using you.
I'll take it, Effie. Hello.
Angel.
Hello, kitten.
Sam, I'm free. Shall I come over?
Well, I'll always be waiting for you, kitten.
Me too, Sam.
Kitten, indeed. C-A-T, kitten.
What's that, Angel?
Oh, forget it, Sam. I just get carried
Can't figure
away.
Me out, eh, Angel? Well, I'll tell you. I've lived without faith, and I've lived without charity, but I've just got to have...
About here is where I say, oh, good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
This is Robert Montgomery. I'm sure our suspense audience agrees with me when I say that whenever it is, it can't be too soon to have Sam Spade back with us again in a full-hour adventure on radio's outstanding theater of thrills. Incidentally, our producer, editor, director on these weekly full hours of suspense, Bill Spear, joins hands with Dashiell Hammett to bring you the adventures of Sam Spade each Sunday night on this network.
Thanks for the plug, Bob. I have a basket full of thanks to my friend Howard Sam Duff, the kind of actor a director lights candles for, and to wonderful Lorraine Tuttle, who plays Effie each week, and to Joseph Kearns, who is the Casper Gutman of them all, and to all you other ornaments to your profession, Kathy Lewis, Wally Mayer, Jay Novello, Jeanette Nolan, Jack Edwards Jr., Sidney Miller, Hans Conried, and Bill Johnston, and of course, as always, to our musical director and conductor, Lud Gluskin, and to the composer of our original scores, Lucian Marowak.
And our special thanks to Bob Tolman and Jason James, who wrote The Candy Tooth, and who were voted by their fellow Mystery Writers of America the Edgar Allan Poe Award for Sam Spade, the best detective show on the air.
And to the Wildroot Company, a gracious sponsor of Sam, for this courtesy and cooperation in making tonight's spadery available. Now tell about next week, Bob.
Next week we will bring you another great American master of suspense, the author of The Postman Always Rings Twice and Double Indemnity, James M. Cain. It's a full hour of Mr. Cain's very wonderful novel, Love's Lovely Counterfeit. This is Robert Montgomery, who will welcome you once again next week to radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Don't forget, next week at this same time, a full hour of Suspense! This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Presents the Screen Guild Players. The Screen Guild play tonight, The Maltese Falcon. The starring players.
This is Humphrey Bogart.
This is Mary Astor.
This is Sidney Greenstreet.
And this is Peter Lorre.
Tonight, Lady Esther presents the Screen Guild Players in Warner Brothers' sensational mystery story, The Maltese Falcon. It stars Humphrey Bogart as Private Detective Sam Spade, Mary Astor as Miss Wonderly, Sidney Greenstreet as Casper Gutman, and Peter Lorre as Joel Cairo. This is the story of the Maltese Falcon and of the people whose lives it touched and seared. It began in San Francisco when a beautiful young woman, who identified herself as Miss Wonderly, walked into the offices of Spade and Archer, private detectives. Miss Wonderly had just told Sam Spade why she wished to engage detectives when Spade's partner, Miles Archer, entered the office.
Oh, excuse me, Sam.
Oh, it's all right, Miles. Come in. Miss Wonderly, this is Miles Archer, my partner.
How do you do?
Oh, I'm pleased to meet you.
Miss Wonderly's sister ran away from New York with a fellow named Floyd Thursby. They're here in San Francisco. Miss Wonderly has seen Thursby and has a date with him tonight. Maybe he'll bring the sister with him. The chances are he won't. Miss Wonderly wants us to find the sister, get her away from Thursby and back home.
But I want you to know that he's a dangerous man. I don't think he'd stop at anything. I don't believe he'd hesitate to kill Corinne, my sister, if he thought it would save him.
Uh-huh. What time is he coming to see you, Miss Wonderly?
After 8 o'clock.
All right, Miss Wonderly, we'll have a man there.
Well, I'll look after it myself.
Thank you, Mr. Archer. Will $200 be enough for a retainer?
Plenty. Oh, it'll help if you meet Thursby in your hotel lobby, Miss Wonderly.
I will. Thank you again.
Goodbye. Well, Archer, what do you think of her?
Sweet. I'm going to enjoy shadowing her.
Okay, sucker. You call me if you run into any trouble. Hello? Yes, it's Spade.
This is Lieutenant Dundee, Spade.
Well, what's on your mind, copper?
I thought you might be interested in knowing that your partner, Archer, was found in an alley near the St. Mark, shot through the heart from close range. Blast burnt his coat. Coming down for a look at him before he's moved?
No. You've seen everything I could.
His gun was tucked away on his hip. It hadn't been fired. His overcoat was buttoned. Was he working, Sam? Well?
He was supposed to be tailing a fellow named Floyd Thursby.
What for?
Now, don't crowd me. I'll see you after I break the news to Archer's wife.
I'll be there in a couple of hours.
Oh, hello, copper. Come on in.
Break the news to Archer's wife, Sam?
Uh-huh. What
kind of a gun do you carry?
None. I don't like them much.
You don't just happen to have one on you.
Search me. Turn the dump upside down if you want to. I won't squawk if you got a search warrant.
Why were you tailing Floyd Thursby, Sam?
I wasn't. Archer was. For the swell reason that we had a client who was paying good money to have him tailed.
Who's the client?
Sorry, I can't tell you that.
You didn't go to Archer's house to tell his wife. I called up and the girl from your office was there and she said you told her to go.
What are you leading up to?
Just this, Spade. Floyd Thursby was shot down in front of his hotel about a half an hour after I talked to you.
Oh. I came into my apartment just a few minutes ahead of you. I was walking around thinking things over.
I knew you weren't here. I tried to get you on the phone. Where'd you walk to?
Just around. Thursby die?
Yeah.
How'd I kill him? I forget.
He was shot 4 times in the back.
Hotel people know anything about him?
Nothing. Except he'd been there a week.
Alone?
Alone.
You find out who he was? What his game was?
No, I thought you could tell me that.
I've never seen Thursby dead or alive.
Now, look, Spade, you know me. If you did get Thursby, you'll get a square deal from me and most of the breaks. I don't know that I'd blame you a lot, man that killed your partner, but that wouldn't keep me from nailing you.
That's fair enough. Now, would you mind scramming? I got some thinking to do, and I'd like to get a little sleep before daylight. Hello? Yeah, this is Sam Spade. Oh, I was just going to call you. Where are you? Well, the Coronet on California Street, apartment 101. What's that? The name's Miss LeBlanc. Okay, I'll be right out. Oh, good morning.
Come in, Mr. Spade. Mr. Spade, I have a terrible, terrible confession to make. That story I told you yesterday was all just a story.
Oh, that. Well, we didn't exactly believe your story, Miss... is your name Wonderly or LeBlanc?
It's really O'Shaughnessy, Bridget O'Shaughnessy.
Oh. Well, Miss O'Shaughnessy, as I said, we didn't exactly believe your story. We believed your $200.
Oh?
Yes, you see, you paid us too much to be telling the truth.
You knew that when you accepted the money?
Oh, I suspected it. I was positive when Joel Cairo called on me.
Joel Cairo?
Yeah. Yeah, he seems interested in Floyd Thursby, too.
What did he say?
About what?
About me.
Nothing.
Well, what did he talk about?
Well, he offered me $5,000 for a black statuette of a bird. He was pretty sure I had it or knew where it was.
Do you?
Oh, I think I know someone who does, and $5,000 is a lot of money. But right now, the police are trying to find out who hired us to tail Floyd Thursby.
Mr. Spade, do they know about me?
No, I don't think they do. I've been able to stall them so far.
Must they know about me at all, Mr. Spade? Couldn't you manage somehow to shield me from them?
Maybe. But I'll have to know what it's all about.
I can't tell you now. Later I will, when I can. You must trust me, Mr. Spade. Oh, I'm so alone and afraid. I've got nobody to help me if you won't help me. Be generous, Mr. Spade. You're strong. You're brave. You can spare me some of that strength and courage, surely.
Sister, you don't need much of anybody's help. You're good. Chiefly your eyes, I think, and that throb you get in your voice when you say things like, be generous, Mr. Spade.
All right. I deserve that. But the lie was in the way I said it, and not at all in what I said.
Ah, now you are dangerous. Still, Cairo offered me $5,000.
It's far more than I could ever offer you if I must bid for your life.
Yeah, that's good coming from you. Have you given me any of your confidence, any of the truth? I can't go ahead without more confidence in you than I have now.
Can't you trust me just a little while?
Well, how much is a little? And what are you waiting for?
I must talk to Joel Cairo.
Oh. Well, you can see him tonight. I know where to reach him.
Oh, he can't come here. I can't let him know where I am. I'm afraid.
We'll all meet at my place, then.
All right.
I'm delighted to see you again, Miss O'Shaughnessy.
I was sure you would be, Joe. Mr. Spade told me about your offer for the Maltese Falcon. How soon can you have the money ready?
Oh, it is ready.
You are ready to give us $5,000 if we turn the Falcon over to you?
I shall be able to give you the money as soon as the bank opens in the morning.
But I haven't got the Falcon.
Then why did you send for me?
Because I'll have it in another week.
Yes? Where is it?
Where Floyd hid it.
If you know where he hid it, why must we wait a week? And why are you willing to sell it to me?
I'm afraid. After what happened to Floyd, I'm afraid to touch it except to turn it over to somebody else right away.
Exactly what did happen to Floyd?
The fat man.
Gottman? Is he here?
I don't know. I suppose so.
If you two let me interrupt for a second, I can answer that. Gottman is here.
How do you know?
Because he called me and asked me to see him.
Have you?
Not yet. I thought that after our friend Cairo here left, I'd find out just how you and I stand before I took on any more clients.
Now do you know how you and I stand, Sam?
Yeah. If I can believe anything about you. But you're such a liar.
I am a liar. I've always been a liar.
Well, I wouldn't brag about it. Was there any truth at all in that yarn you were telling me about Thursby and the Falcon?
Some. Not very much.
Well, we've got all night before us.
Oh, I'm so tired. So tired of lying and thinking up lies and not knowing what is a lie and what is the truth. I wish...
Now, look, honey. I think I'd better have a talk with Gutman in the morning. Now, Mr. Gutman, shall we talk about the Falcon?
No. By all means, Mr. Spade. But first, sir, answer me a question. Are you here as Mr. O'Shaughnessy's representative?
Well, there's nothing certain about it either way yet. It depends.
Maybe it depends on Joel Cairo?
Maybe.
The question then, Mr. Spade, is which you'll represent. It'll be Miss O'Shaughnessy or Mr. Cairo?
I didn't say so.
Who else is there?
There's me.
Oh, well, that's wonderful, sir, wonderful. I do like a man who tells you right out he's looking out for himself. Don't we all?
Uh-huh. Now let's talk about the Blackbird.
Let's, Mr. Spade. Have you any conception of how much money can be got out of that Blackbird?
No, but you just tell me what it is, and I'll figure out the profits.
You mean you don't know what that bird is?
Well, I know it's black enamel and about a foot high, and I know the value in human life you people put on it.
Miss O'Shaughnessy didn't tell you what it is?
He offered
and
me...
And Cairo didn't either?
He offered me $10,000 for it.
Do either of them know what that bird is, sir? What is your impression?
Well, there's not much to go by, but I don't think so.
If they don't know, I'm the only one in the whole wide, sweet world who does.
Good. And when you tell me, there'll be two of us.
Mathematically correct, sir. But I don't know for certain that I'm going to tell you.
Well, you think again and think fast. You'll do your talking today or you're through. What are you wasting my time for? I can get along without you.
That remains to be seen, Mr. Spade. They're away.
And there's another thing. Keep that gunman of yours away from me while you're making up your mind or I'll kill him.
Well, sir, I must say you have a very violent temper.
Think it over. You've got till 5:30. Then you're either in or out for keeps.
Wilma.
I'm going to kill that guy. I could have done it easy when he was standing there with his back to me.
Of course you could, my boy. But business before pleasure. And we'll be seeing Mr. Spade again before 5:30.
Act One of The Maltese Falcon, starring Peter Lorre, Sidney Greenstreet, Mary Astor, and Humphrey Bogart. Act Two in just a moment. But first, here's a word from our hostess, Lady Astor.
Some weeks ago, I was being shown through a shipyard, one of the largest in the country, and stopped to chat with a young woman wearing a safety mask. It gave her a stern, rather severe look. But when she removed the mask to chat with me, she was young and blonde and very lovely. Her skin looked so dainty and fresh that I just couldn't resist saying, "My, you look as though you just stepped out of a bandbox." She laughed and said, "Oh, I've been on the job since early this morning, and I haven't even had time to repowder my face. But after all, I do use your powder, you know." Of course, she's only one of millions of busy, important women who use Lady Astor face powder, partly because of its remarkable clinging quality. They explain that when they use Lady Astor face powder, they have the comfortable feeling that their skin always looks smooth and fresh, never streaked, caked, or shiny. But that's only one of the reasons why more lovely women now use Lady Astor face powder than any other kind. There are two other important reasons. First, the texture of my powder is so flattering that it hides little lines and blemishes, makes your skin look younger. And second, the shades of Lady Astor face powder are so rich, vivid, and alive. They give new interest, a look of new beauty to your skin. And both the unusual texture and the flattering shades are the result of my patented twin hurricane method of making face powder. So if you'd like to have your skin look softer, smoother, younger, and look that way for hours at a time, just try Lady Astor face powder.
Curtain rises on the second act of The Maltese Falcon, starring Humphrey Bogart as Sam Spade, Mary Astor as Bridget O'Shaughnessy, Sidney Greenstreet as Casper Gutman, the fat man, and Peter Lorre as Joel Cairo. Late in the afternoon, following Sam Spade's visit to Gutman's apartment, a dying man staggered into Spade's office and collapsed on the floor. He died before he could speak to Spade. company's papers identified him as Captain Jacoby of the steamship La Paloma. And clutched to his bullet-torn chest was the Maltese Falcon. After depositing the Falcon in a railroad station checkroom and mailing the identification check to his private post office box, Sam met Bridget O'Shaughnessy and took her to his apartment.
You know, Sam, I never would have placed myself in this position if I hadn't trusted you completely.
Oh, that again?
But you know that's so.
You don't have to trust me as long as you can persuade me to trust you.
But Sam, darling...
Well, I think we better let it go at that until we see what happens after Gutman gets here.
The fat man? Here?
Certainly, why not? Anyway, that should be him. So it's too late to change our plans. I'll be right back. Oh, hello, Gutman.
Good evening, sir.
I see you brought company. I can understand the gunman, but I didn't know Cairo was a friend of yours.
No, we're old acquaintances. Now that we're all here, let's go in and sit down and be comfortable and talk.
Oh, sure. Come on in. Now, look, Angel. Gutman brought a couple of friends along.
Good evening, Mrs. O'Shaughnessy.
Hello, Joe.
You look unusually charming this evening, my dear.
Thanks.
The gunsel doesn't talk, Angel. Get away from me, punk.
Stand still and shut up.
Listen, you're not going to frisk me, touch me, and I'm going to make you use that gun. Ask your boss if he wants me shut up before we talk.
Never mind, Wilma. Oh, you're certainly a most headstrong and unpredictable individual, Mr. Spade. Now, why did you send for me?
You ready to make the first payment and take the Falcon off my hands?
The Falcon?
That's right, Angel. I've got it.
Well, sir, I have in this envelope
$10,000. $10,000? Oh, we were talking about more money than that.
Yes, sir, we were, but there are more of us to be taken care of now.
Well, that may be, but I've got the Falcon.
I shouldn't think it would be necessary to remind you, Mr. Spade, that though you may have the Falcon, yet we certainly have you.
Yes, I'm trying not to let that worry me, but let the money wait. There's another thing to be taken care of first. We've got to have a fall guy.
I beg your pardon?
Police have got to have a victim, somebody they can stick for those three murders.
Two. Only two murders, Mr. Spade. Thursby undoubtedly killed your partner.
All right. Two, then. Now, the point I've got to give the police, a victim when the time comes. If I don't, I'll be it. Let's give him Wilmer here.
Why, you dirty rat.
He actually did shoot Thursby and Jacoby, didn't he? Anyway, he's made to order for the part. Let's turn him over to them.
By God, so you are a character, that you are. There's never any telling what you'll say or do next, except that it's bound to be something astonishing.
Well, it's our best bet. With him in their hands, the police will forget the rest of us.
Your plan is not at all practical, sir. Let's not say anything more about it.
All right. I have another suggestion. Let's give him Cairo.
Well, by God, sir.
Suppose we give him you, Mr. Spade, or Mr. Shaughnessy. How about that, huh?
Sam, you wouldn't.
You people want the fork, and I've got it. A fall guy is part of the price I'm insisting on.
You seem to forget you're not in a position to insist on anything.
No? If you kill me, how are you going to get the Falcon?
By God, sir, you are a character.
Well?
Well, what else can I do? I'm sorry, Wilma. Terribly sorry. I want you to know that I couldn't be any fonder of you if you were my own son. But, well, if you lose a son, it's possible to get another. And there's only one Maltese Falcon.
You rat, I'll kill you for this.
Thank you, Mr. Spade. When you're as young as Wilma, one simply doesn't understand these things.
Well, how about some coffee, Bridget? Put the pot on, will you? I don't like to leave my guests.
Surely. Anything to get out of here.
Now, sir, let's get down to business.
I ought to have more than 10,000.
Of course, sir, you understand this is the first payment. You still don't understand the Falcon's worth.
Well, a black enamel bird can't be worth millions.
But it is. Otherwise, I should not have spent 17 years of my life trying to acquire it. The black enamel you refer to, sir, is merely camouflage, covering a solid gold bird encrusted from head to foot with the finest jewel.
Okay. So I get millions later. How's about 15,000 now?
Frankly and candidly, and on my word of honor as a gentleman, the 10,000 I gave you is all the money I can raise right now.
Yeah, but you didn't say positively.
Positively.
Well, if that's the best you can do, it's the best you can do. But it's understood the punk has to stand as the fall guy.
That is part of our agreement, sir.
Okay, I'll make a phone call. The Falcon will be here in an hour.
It's a fake. Huh? This is not the Maltese Falcon. This is a lead imitation covered with the same enamel. See where I've shaved it off with a knife lead.
all that. You bungled it. You, Gutman, you and your stupid attempt to buy it from the Russian who owned it. He caught on to how valuable it was. No wonder we had so little trouble stealing it. You imbecile. You bloated idiot.
Well, sir, what do you suggest? Shall we stand here and shed tears and call each other names? Or shall we pay the Russian another call in Istanbul?
Are you going?
17 years I've wanted that little item, and I intend to get it. Another year, well, sir, that will be an additional expenditure of time on only 5 15/17%.
I go with you.
Good. And Wilma?
Wilma,
Where is the boy?
He must have made his getaway while we were unwrapping the fog.
A swell lot of thieves.
Well, sir, I left to ask you to return my $10,000.
I held up my end. It's your hard luck, not mine, if you didn't get what you wanted.
I'm sorry, but I must insist.
Oh, a hideout gun, huh? Okay.
Thank you, sir. The shortest farewells are the best. Adieu. And to you, Miss O'Shaughnessy, I leave the fake Fulton Falcon as a little memento. Come, Clara.
Hello, police department. Lieutenant Dundee there, put him on. Tell him Sam Spade's calling. Now, look, Angel. Gutman and Cairo will talk when the cops nail him about us. We've only got minutes to get set for the police. Now, give me your whole story fast.
Well, where shall I begin?
The day you first came to my office. Why did you want Thursby shadowed?
I suspected him of betraying me to Gutman, and I wanted to find out.
That's a lie. Gutman tried to make a deal with him. You had Thursby hooked, and you knew it. You wanted to get him out of the way before Captain Jacoby arrived with the Falcon. Isn't that so? What was your scheme?
I thought if he saw someone following him, he might be frightened into going away.
Now look, Archer hadn't many brains, but he wasn't clumsy enough to be spotted the first night. You must have told Thursby he was being followed.
I told him. Yes. But please believe me, Sam, I wouldn't have told him if I'd thought Floyd would kill him.
If you thought he wouldn't kill Archie, you were right, Angel.
Didn't he?
Archie had been a detective too long to be caught shadowing a man up a blind alley with his gun tucked away in his hip and his overcoat buttoned. But he'd have gone up there with you, Angel. He was just dumb enough for that.
Sam.
And then you could have stood as close to him as you liked, there in the dark. Put a hole through him with a gun you'd gotten from Thursby that evening.
Don't talk to me like that, Sam. You know I didn't.
Now, the police will be blowing in any minute now, Angel. Talk.
Oh, why do you accuse me of such a terrible...
Why did you shoot Archie? I thought Thursby would tackle him and one or the other would go down. If Thursby was killed, then you were rid of him. If it was Archer, then you could see that Thursby was caught. Was that it?
Something.
And when
something
you find
like
out
that
Thursby didn't mean to tackle Archer, you borrowed the gun and did it yourself, right?
I guess so.
I know so. You didn't know Gutman was here looking for you until you learned Thursby was shot. Then you needed another protector. So you came back to me.
Yes, but though, sweetheart, it wasn't only that. I would have come back to you sooner or later. From the very first instant I saw you, I knew that...
You angel. Well, if you get a good break, you'll be out of San Quentin in 20 years.
Sam, you're not...
Yes, Angel. I'm going to send you over. But if they hang you, I'll always remember you.
Don't, Sam. Don't say that. Even in fun.
It's not fun. I happen to be in the detective business, and you killed my partner. It's bad business to... let the killer get away with it. Bad for every detective in this country. You're taking the fall.
You've been playing with me. Only pretending you cared to trap me like this. You didn't care at all. You don't love me.
I think I do. But what of it? I won't play the sap for you.
You know it's not like that. You can't say that.
I am saying it.
You know down deep in your heart, you know that in spite of everything I've done, I love you.
I don't care who loves who. You killed Archer. And you're going over for it. Come in. Oh, hello, copper.
Hello, Sam.
You get Gutman and Cairo?
We got Cairo. Gutman's dead. The kid Wilmer had just finished shooting him when we got there.
I ought to have expected that. You better put the cuffs on Angel, copper. We're taking her down to the station.
What charge?
Sam.
Murder. She shot Miles Archer. Oh, and you better bring that blackbird along, too, copper. It's... part of the evidence against Cairo.
Hey, this is heavy. What's it made of?
The stuff that dreams are made of. Oh.
the story of the Maltese Falcon. Thank you, Mary Astor, Humphrey Bogart, Sidney Greenstreet, and Peter Lorre for appearing with the Lady Astor Screen Guild Players tonight, and also for telling us the most exciting story.
It was our pleasure, Mr. Bradley. We all had a wonderful time making the picture, and the radio version tonight brought back some wonderful memories. Then, too, knowing that the benefits from these programs support the Motion Picture Country House and Clinic give us an added incentive. And now, before we tell you about next week's program, here's a word from one of America's best-known beauty authorities, Lady Astor.
Thank you, Miss Astor. Ladies, you know it's surprising the number of letters new users of Lady Astor face powder have sent me in the last few months. So many of them say the same thing, that Lady Astor face powder is an entirely different kind of powder, that it does wonderful things for the appearance of the skin, makes it look softer, smoother, and often years younger. Well, Lady Astor face powder is more flattering, more becoming, because my powder isn't just mixed, just blended like ordinary face powder. It's made by a method new, unique, exclusively mine. You see, Lady Astor face powder is blown at whirling speed by my famous twin hurricanes. Yes, my patented twin hurricane process blows and whips color and powder particles together until they're evenly married, blended into a fine, smooth, sheer mist of beauty, finer in texture and truer in shade than powder ever made by ordinary methods. That's why Lady Astor face powder smooths on so much more evenly, and why the shades of my powder are so clear and alive. They make your skin younger looking, more vivid, far lovelier. Why don't you try Lady Astor face powder and see how much happier you'll be with the appearance of your skin?
Before we tell you about next week's program, Humphrey Bogart has a word to say from our government.
You all know the third war loan drive is on full steam, the drive to back the attack our fighting forces are making against our enemies. As our share toward victory, we at home must buy $15 billion worth of war bonds, which means each one of us must dig down deeper into our own pockets. Each of us must buy at least one extra bond this month. We have to win this war, and we will win, all right. But how soon we win is up to every one of us. So buy an extra war bond this week, sure, to help speed our day to victory.
Next week, the Lady Astor Screen Guild Players will present highlights from Warner Brothers' great new musical picture, Thank Your Lucky Stars. It will star Joan Leslie, Dennis Morgan, Dinah Shore, and Eddie Cantor. Be sure to listen. Humphrey Bogart can soon be seen in the Warner Brothers production, Thank Your Lucky Stars. Mary Astor is currently playing in the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Technicolor production, Thousands Cheer. Sidney Greenstreet and Peter Lorre appeared through the courtesy of Warner Brothers. Music on tonight's program was arranged and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. To help your government save tin, buy the larger size of Lady Astor face cream, and at the same time, you will save yourself money to invest in war bonds and stamps. Truman Bradley speaking for Lady Astor. Thank you. Good night.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.